Every time you come back, it's an improved place, so it's a very nice feeling. So I'll talk about loops and inflation. And see, I will always talk about single field inflation. And so here is the outline. I will do a bit of introduction because I think there are some parts. Of course, you all know about loops, but there are some parts that I would like to stress. And I will concentrate about IR effects in single field inflation. And there are three or four that I will talk about. One is the logarithmic running, which there are logarithmic divergences in inflation, like in Minkowski space. And the way the mass scale saturates the logarithmic divergence is kind of important. I think it's very important, and it's log h over mu. Then I will show that zeta is not time dependent, so this infrared effect is not there. Then I will say that the negative infrared effects of the form log kl are not there. That is, they are physically not there. They are zero. They have zero physical effect. And then I will instead found a new true IR effect, which is very small, but it's an IR effect, which, however, it's nice to resum. I will effort even the resummation. The organizing principle of this talk is that all the IR effects can be investigated in the following way, either by looking at, by realizing that they give projection effects that affect how you see a mode. And then there are dynamical effects. The dynamical effects are indeed zero. That is very small. There is no large effect associated with that. So let me give a brief introduction. So first of all, let's talk about loops and inflation. I would like to say who cares. In a sense that if you take a standard theory of Schrödinger inflation, you take the three-level scalar field fluctuation in Fourier space, and you normalize to the equivalent perturbation, we know that this is 10 to the minus 10. Since epsilon is smaller than 1, we know, therefore, that h over n plus squared is smaller than 10 to the minus 10. This means that the one loop correction here, namely just by dimensionalizing scales like this quantity, which is a smaller than 10 to the minus 10 than the three-level result. Clearly, this is a tiny, tiny effect. So unless there are something big coming out, this is irrelevant. I think there are two things that changed in the last few years. First, the first thing is that we found that there are theories of inflation that have much, much stronger self-interaction than this one Schrödinger inflation, where indeed the leading self-interaction comes from gravity. So they're very small. Instead, there are theories, the theories which predict large non-Gaussianities, which are completely fine, but they have strong self-interaction. This coupling can be very large, not h of n plus, which is doomed to be smaller than one by a lot. And indeed, the bound on those what makes the size of the loop small is indeed the fact that we didn't see non-Gaussianities in the sky. So it's the fact that the CMB is to good approximation Gaussian up to a level of 10 to minus 3 means that the loop needs to be at 10 to minus 6. So we jump by 4 order of magnitudes, and more actually because there's an epsilon there, but it's still small. It's hard to imagine that it's observable. However, but at least closer. Now, another thing that changed in the last few years is that Weinberg cared about these papers, these loops. And if Weinberg cared, I care, okay? So, okay, this is a joke, but maybe it's true, actually. No, but his point was very right. He said, okay, looks like inflation is looking good with the data, it looks great. But quantum mechanics exists. It's important to check the leading quantum mechanical correction and to check that everything goes fine because this is a quantum mechanical theory. It should be fine. Until we do it, we are not completely sure. And so he started the calculation of the perturbation and opened what is a Pandora box. And in fact, this is very beautiful what he did because these are really the quantum corrections to the prediction that you observe in the sky. But I think there are other interesting points. Which are the fact that, as Steve Giddens explained in his talk, this theory is a very puzzling space-time. And inflation offers a sort of regularization of the theory. And let me elaborate on this, because this is actually my motivation. So my motivation is to study eternal inflation, because eternal inflation has become very important in the last few years for a very different reason, which is the solution to the cosmological constant. Weinberg, the usual Weinberg, predicted the anthropic solution, the cosmological constant, which looks great, and it seems to be true. So, but it relies on this concept that you need to populate the many vacua on the land of vacua when the cosmological constant scans. And this thing requires a certain inflation. But an inflation happens in close to the sitter, and we are puzzled from quantum gravity point of view in the sitter space. So my target, which I spent a few years working on, together with other staff, is to understand very well eternal inflation. In fact, the same puzzle that Giddings was talking about during his talk are really arising really from the Schwarzschild black hole and the information problem, which were resolved indeed. We think it's been resolved now. We begin to see that there is the solution. Now, in the sitter, with the holographic interpretation of the sitter, we are in the same situation. We think, again, that there is information, holography, and so on. But for the eternal inflation, we don't even have the geometry. So until, I think we did a lot of progress in this, but even the geometry of the eternal inflation was not known. In fact, the geometry is very beautiful. It's a stochastic geometry, where small-scale quantum effects produce changes in the asymptotic space-time. I think it's even more beautiful than the black hole, because it's more radical. The geometry is not a semi-classical geometry, it's really a quantum geometry. It's a fully stochastic geometry. So it's hard to resolve, to me, it's hard to solve the eternal inflation problem or the sitter problem without knowing the geometry. So now my target here was just to try to find the Schwarzschild solution for eternal inflation. Well, what Giddings was talking in his talk, that is the fact that there is a rise in inflation in the sitter, so we think that all the information should be encoded. I will be slightly more specific in the next slide, but the point is that in a black hole, we think that because of holography, we think that there is complementarity, that is, you cannot talk at the same time, both at the interior and of the exterior of the Schwarzschild horizon. In fact, we think that all the information in the inside is encoded in the outside through the deviation from the thermal radiation.
You involve gravitons at all. So, I mean, in order to really make any sensible statements about the general sitter, you would have to stochastic gravity.
Yes, we didn't. You, before this works, it hadn't been done properly even with the scalar. And the scalar is the leading factor. So, if you want to work on this, very welcome. Please, I'm looking for help. Yes, sounds good. So this is the first calculation where you define properly what is eternal inflation, and you begin to study it, okay? So I don't say it's finished, but this is a work in progress. So the first thing which indeed gives you eternal inflation, as you know, is not the gravitons, it's the scalar field. And what eternal inflation arises? It arises because the two-point function of the scalar field in free space is 1 over k cubed. This means that the coincidence field, regularized with a physical cutoff, goes like a square log a. And this infinite part, which had this morning, which goes like t. This is very important, because it tells that the field fluctuations are doing a random walk in free space. And only with this ingredient, based on this ingredient, we can prove what I think is really the rigorous proof of eternal inflation, of the existence of eternal inflation, which is take a box and fill it with a scalar field. The box is each point of the box is here, and let the inflaton go. So you take the box, you put the inflaton on top of the potential, and let the inflaton go. The universe will begin to expand. Each point will undergo inflation, and the duration of inflation at each point will vary in time, because the time it takes for a field to reach phi reheating, it changes between time position to position because of the small quantum fluctuation. So the physical surface, phi equals phi reheating, which is a Gibbs invariant, well-defined surface, you see, is not really equal time surface, there are small deviation. Now, as you make the potential flatter and flatter, and you go to the regime of eternal inflation, self-reproduction inflation, what you think is going to happen is that since the random jumps become more important with respect to the drift down, the duration of the inflation in each point becomes a bit varied between point to point. This means that this surface, which at the beginning was quite uniform, becomes very, very curved. And clearly, something strange going on here. And what we decided to do is to study we thought that this was a well-defined observable for eternal inflation, and we studied it. Particularly, you can study what is the probability distribution of the volume of this surface. This surface will have, every time you start this box and let it go, will be different because of the quantum jumps. And you can study the probability distribution. And what we found is that if you take a standard inflation potential, the probability to create an infinite volume is exactly equal to zero. Then, as a function of the slope of the potential, there is a certain point, a sudden phase transition, where this probability to create an infinite volume passes from being exactly equal to zero to non-zero. So this, I really think, and this happens. So just to say, this is the proof or the definition of eternal inflation. It means that you have a finite probability to create an infinite volume. This is the probability of never-ending inflation. This actually, even we were able to find the parameter when this phase transition happened. It happens when the slope of the potential parameterized with the speed of the inflow over h to the fourth becomes less of order one. Of course.
So I
don't know if you care of this or not, but so this number was unknown. If you ask some people, of course, in El Sol, many people knew this thing, but this number was not known. A gauge invariant definition of eternal inflation was not given. This, I think, is one of the most beautiful solutions of GR that exists, because it's quantum mechanics changing the asymptotic space-time. Okay, so it's very similar to the black hole evaporation problem.
Is it going to matter about the later talk? Because if it isn't, I'll just drop it. But I really
it doesn't matter.
We can't observe that other stuff.
No. When this volume finishes, then it can. When the volume finishes, when the inflation finishes, you see this stuff. Okay, so you see this volume. And if you happen to be in a parameter range which is closer to an inflation but still volume finite, you are going to see that. So
there's some prediction now that goes wrong depending upon how this sorts itself out, right? What's that prediction?
When this prediction goes wrong, sorry. No, I mean, I'm just saying that you can compute what is the redistribution of this surface, of the volume of this surface, and it follows the strange redistribution where there is a finite probability at plus infinity.
Okay.
I think this you might not care of this. That's fine with me. It's extremely beautiful, right? Because it's a quantum mechanics changing the asymptotic space time, and we begin to understand these things. Okay.
Would it be fair to say it's an aesthetic issue?
Oh no, it's a. Okay, go to Hawking and say the evaporation of the black hole is an aesthetic issue.
I don't want to argue. I'm just trying to find out. I really don't understand what you're saying. If it doesn't matter for the later talk, then please just go ahead.
It doesn't matter. This was my introduction. Okay. If you were to give this talk, it's the same stuff, I think. If I could say, maybe you disagree, but I think it's the same problems we could send and also give you. So.
Let me inject one thing, Richard. You know, if you believe there's a quantum mechanics of the universe, there's the question, what is the quantum wave function? How do you calculate it here?
How could I measure it?
I didn't. Well, okay, that's a separate question. But if you believe that there's a quantum mechanical wave function,
how do I calculate the particle in the box wave function? Somebody has to tell me what state I start off in, and then I use the Heisenberg equation solution to solve it. But I don't want to disrupt his talk. If it doesn't matter for the later stuff, please just go ahead.
No. We will come back to a standard point of view later. But this, I think, I'm very proud, and I'll say it. Okay. I think it's relevant to some people. I think it's relevant. I will mention specifically, even a question that was done before, I will mention this. So this is a subgroup. Okay. So now this defines explicitly what is eternal inflation in a rigorous way. And then with a lot of more work, in fact, there is a second paper we did, which is, I think, it's even almost solving eternal inflation. This is in a classical, it's in a classical limit, if you want. Which we found that actually you can study, we were able actually not to study just this feature of the probability distribution, but actually the actual probability distribution we are able to study. To go beyond saying that at a certain point the infinite volume has non-zero probability, we are able to study actually the probability distribution. And we found something remarkable that then maybe some people can begin why this is to be interesting. We found that whenever the volume is finite, the probability to have a finite volume larger than e to the s the sitter over 2, that is a Vorel expansion larger than e to the s the sitter over 2, because it's not perturbed, it's more in quantum gravity effect. This means that it's beyond our control, and so for our purpose is zero. This means that in practice, even every time that there is both in an eternal regime or in an eternal regime, you stick this box, you let it go, the volume either is infinite, it can be infinite, or if it is finite, it is smaller than e to the s the sitter over 2. Now, this result, which I will comment in a second, is kind of important. I think it is interesting, but let me say one thing. All these results about eternal inflation, the phase transition, this bound, which I will comment in a second, is a consistent check of the holographic interpretation of the Sitter space, is fail if a one loop the two-point function, the scalar field receives this correction at log k, and this was the result of Weinberg, or function of times. In this case, in one loop, the two-point function will go like t squared, and this will let all these results go. So this is why I care about the loop, because I want to prove that this is true also at one loop.
So the probability you write here, it looks like internal inflation and non-internal inflation has different entropy, because the transition is suppressed by some entropy factor.
Yeah, but this is very small, right? I mean, the transition happens more or less when Hubble is called, you're just changing the slope. In fact, this is really the entropy at the end of inflation.
Are you going to explain why it fails if it has that logarithmic correction?
Because then the random walk approximation at one loop you wouldn't hold anymore, and then you don't get the Fokker-Planck equation if you want.
Just one question. In general, if it were a function of the physical momentum, so that you had time dependence of k over a t, would it still fail? Or so if the function that you had there, rather than log k or log a t, or something like an arbitrary function of maybe some particular.
No, there's more than the wrong question. No.
Is that a problem? Or?
No. Yeah, this calculation is done. There is a limit in which you can neglect the Rolle correction. So here, I think what they're referring here is that, for example, these that we need these Rolle terms, like, for example, Hubble, horizon crossing, enter. So.
All I'm saying is that suppose that one found the calculation and found that rather than log k or log a t, found that the result is a certain function of the physical momentum.
I think it's dangerous. I think it's dangerous. The statement is that the two-point function coincidence should be able to reproduce the Fokker-Planck.
Exactly.
Yeah, you need to have the Fokker-Planck equation. If it doesn't, so the check is that you have to do the simple step from here to get the Fokker-Planck equation, and naively it fails if there is t squared. Now I don't know about I don't have a theorem for any function of time.
One final question. So this is in the context of single field scalar inflation. One could imagine adding a whole lot of weirdo spectator fields with self-interactions and everything. Is your worry if any of those ever introduced a log k or a log a or fail?
I don't know. So you're welcome to begin to compute it. We don't know. Yeah. In fact, I take back my answer before. This thing matters later. So maybe you should get it. Yeah. This thing will matter later for inflation. So I will come. One other reason why I say this thing is because this will enter at the end of the talk. Okay.
And how about higher orders? If I ever got a log k, would that ever be a problem?
So the point is that you should get a one loop. I think then it will scale all different. It will be bad. Yes. Log k. Of course, log k you cannot really get. You can maybe log over your t, but.
And is it that it grows too fast for small k? Is that the problem?
It probably that when you go to the space, coincidentally you don't have the random walk anymore.
Isn't that just a faster random walk? Isn't that better for you guys?
It's not obvious. Depends on the size. Yeah, but do you really like to say that every model of inflation is a time inflating? According to the sign, is never a time inflation, always a time inflation. So it's a sign that we need to control. Okay, we need to understand.
Okay, I just want to be clear. So you'd be upset about a log k or a log a and any order in perturbation theory from any source, right?
I think you should be careful with the way the Fokker-Planck equation works, because I think in some sense nobody has done it so more carefully. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is that naively loop corrections are important. So I don't think you even need the Fokker-Planck equation one loop. So I mean, it's tough, right? So we don't know. The point is that if you give me this thing, you apply the Fokker-Planck equation, it doesn't work, okay? So let me say that this bound on this iterator is kind of interesting.
But I was just wondering, isn't that a bit gauge dependent? A bit? Is it gauge dependent, this statement?
I think this is actually an expansion. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have brought it up. This was an expansion in its Rolle parameter. And it is gauge invariant. Because is that difficult to include here this Rolle correction? And the metric fluctuation enter only at that level? Okay.
I'm guessing you're very naively.
So, very naively, this is gauge invariant, yes. Because the physical delta phi is decoupled from. The meta, if you look at enough small scale, the metric fluctuation is smaller. So.
Because I'm just asking, because if I do a delta transformation, I of course introduce logs, like, or whatever.
delta n.
Yeah, I mean a gauge transformation between.
Yeah, so this figure was used to compute something which is very gauge invariant. I mean, you could keep track of that. In fact, we computed n. The final thing is that with this you compute n. And I think it's all consistent in a Schrödinger spatial. Suddenly, fresh Schrödinger spatial affects how the Fokker plan depends on Hubble, gauge invariant, magnetic perturbation, all of this stuff. This has not been done. So I think there was a question before. Why is we talk about the Sitter log? Is there ever a consistency check we can do? Is that are this log somewhat interesting for the? We talk about the overall function, this function here. Is there some check we could do, something related to the Sitter holography? And I think it is. And this effect, this bound on the number of foldings, allows for a consistency check of the Sitter holography, which means that. Suppose if you are in the Sitter space, you live in one point. After some time, we think that the information from maybe nobody knows for sure, but it could be that an holographic interpretation could be that the information comes from the outside, comes from the thermal radiation. But since the thermal radiation has many photons, you need a long time to begin to study the deviation from thermality and begin to extract information about the outside. Like this is similar to black hole. It takes a long time for you to get the deviation from thermality. But suppose that now you live a long time in a black hole and you get the deviation from thermality. Then you say, oh, I observed the state. Let me go inside and see the state again. You can check that this you cannot do. It's beautiful. It works because you need the Planckian acceleration. And this, if you were able to do, you measure the state twice, it would be Xeros paradox. And this holography will fail with quantum mechanics. In the city, you could imagine the same. You live there for a while. After a bit, after given enough time, you will get the deviation from the Hockey radiation.
But I'm not sure that there's a reason to
expect
that.
I think this is under it's questionable, because the outside the sitter is infinite, but because of that. But I'm not sure why not. I mean, the entropy, we have an entropy, right? I don't think we know.
Case, and that's related to the fact that in the end we'd better have unitary evolution, so the information would better start coming out, and that's Page's argument. But in the De Sitter case, I don't see.
But this is the holographic. We don't need an holographic interpretation for the Sitter space. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But if you begin to say that there's an holographic interpretation, then you begin to have consistency checks. Anyway, what happens in truth? What is true? Yeah. Is that. Suppose that you are in the Sitter space, maybe you get information, but suppose instead of being in the Sitter space, you are in a phase which ends, and then at a certain point, inflation ends. Then, inflation ends, and at a certain point, you begin to see the modes. Yes. Then, since the modes come in, you are seeing the information twice. That would be a Xeros paradox. However, what happens is that the only time you live in the Sitter and then ends, and you see everything again, is when the volume is smaller than this quantity, which means that you live in the Sitter space a number which is as the Sitter, which is the same number which has been coming Hubble time, which is the same number which has been coming in several talks. So this is the maximum amount of time you live in the Sitter. Maybe you cannot get information this time. In fact, the so-called, I think it's Page number, it says that you see a black hole bit after S black hole over 2. Schwarzschild times, and here is the same here. So I find it interesting that instead of when the volume is infinite, you are not access to all the information, so it doesn't matter. So this is a very interesting fact about the Sitter, which agrees with holography. So another problem with why we have to do loops is because if the zeta function is evolves with time.
So are you saying if you're in the phase where eternal inflation doesn't happen, you do have a paradox?
Yeah. So when you are in realization, which doesn't end, then when you are in realization which ends, then the volume is bounded. I think this bound is interesting. It's a consistency check, but I cannot go much beyond that because I think these are all very vague. These are some of the first numbers we begin to get.
How can we tell now? We can see 6,000 megaparsecs. We'll never see any further if the universe keeps accelerating. How can we tell?
Yeah. These are really more try to check consistency also for quantum gravity. Yeah. This is not related to our current universe. So the reason is because if zeta function depends on time, this is bad because our predictivity about inflation relies on the fact that zeta, when it's at rise, doesn't evolve in time. In fact, now in inflation, this figure is going to be always very small because there is, as Wooda was pointing out, there is a 10 to minus 10 in front. But it's not true. I think what you said this morning is not really true always, because you could have problems, for example, at every heating time, with perturbation of order 1. If there are big reactions from the shell modes and they induce evolution on scales longer than the horizon, then predictivity inflation is lost, really by order 1. So it's very important to show that zeta is independent, and inflation is a weakly coupled version.
But this happens in models with entropy perturbations.
Yeah, in fact, with entropy perturbations, you have to follow exactly the evolution of the universe until you thermalize again. So, in fact, you have to follow the evolution, you have to know what happens. So now, let's begin the loop calculation, because of the video. Let me start with the logarithmic running. So, as was pointed out, the first calculation of the correlation function in inflation was done by Weinberg, and he found this result. Well, there are logarithmic derivatives as in inflation, as in Minkowski, but there was a commutative scale here. Now, these are, I cited among the things that are bad for the current inflation. So, for us, was kind of worrisome. In reality, it's easy to realize that there had to be a technical problem here, because under the zero momentum gauge transformation, which is the scaling, the scale factor and scaling AX, X, and according to K, everything should be invariant, and this is not invariant.
Actually, so I disagree with that argument, because you have an infrared cutoff, which is fixed.
No, this is UV.
So the UV cutoff is going to be a fixed physical coordinates, and the infrared cutoff is going to be
fixed. Yeah. In fact, I think there's a way to do the calculation where there is never an infrared cutoff. I agree with you otherwise. But there is no infrared cutoff in these calculations. So the way we check this thing is by using the effective theorem inflation, which is a very general setup to study inflation, and particularly specialized to one of the theory that was mentioned in the former talk, where there are large self-interactions. This was the simplest possible theory of inflation you can study, where the interactions are extremely simple, so you have just one diagram, basically, but something physical, because this is inflation, the perturbation inflation, and you can compute it. It's also very good to normalize, so if one is interested in normalization, I would recommend using this.
I read your paper, and I was very confused by this effective model. It has a feature that the gravity plus implotron model doesn't have, meaning that every single term is differentiated. I mean, in gravity, which does have a model.
No, here there are other terms which are not differentiated that I'm neglecting for simplicity, but here there is a t plus pi, here there is. So if you begin to term expand this function of times, whenever this.
All the ones you've shown have just differentiated.
Yes, because you can go to a regime where the self-interaction of the inflaton are much larger than the one with gravity. So you can neglect those and study loop correction of those. It's a consistent approximation.
So is this leading order in Floral?
It's leading order in interaction. There's a strong self-interaction. It's standard run inflation. If you only look at standard run inflation models, the spatial interaction is the Floral expansion. They agree.
But if you're trying to see infrared effects, isn't it sort of hopeless if you look at it?
In fact, here, this is the log running. By log running, I mean the ultraviolet log. Okay, this mu here is the normalization. This is the normalization scale. There are also these effects, okay, which before we saw, for example, in the talk. Okay, so if you do correctly calculation, it turns out that there was a problem with the implementation of dimensional regularization. You find that actually the log k here becomes log of Hubble, and this makes a lot of physical sense because it's really like what happens. And this is an infrared effect, because it's the way this scale, if you do the calculation in Minkowski, because if you do the calculation in Minkowski, you get.
Could I ask a question about that result? Doesn't that.
There's a box that shock this yellow box.
I found one, sorry.
Doesn't that contradict your statement that the zeta zeta correlator is not time dependent? I mean, h of t does have some time dependence, it's slow roll inflation.
Yeah, sorry. I meant that zero order is wrong. So, it's not even a time dependence, sorry, if you really, technically it's a k-dependent, sorry, may I say one thing, technically it is k-dependent, it's not time dependent, okay? It's
Hubble. H at horizon.
Yeah, and that's the dependence which enters in K. This is the deviation from scaling invariant. Like you are used to have a tilt,
okay,
even
so
the local connection.
I was confused about what it is that bothers you, and I still don't understand what it is that bothers you about the K dependence, but is that bad enough K dependence? That's going to be some K dependence. Is that bad enough?
No, because all the formulas was done neglecting the local correction, so I don't know about that, okay? Even the Fokker form, everything needs to be corrected as, at that order. So one step at a time, unfortunately, limited power. But so the formal calculation was that neglecting the local correction because the inflation happens even with flat potential in some sense. The next order correction, the slow correction, are very complicated. There are many, many ways they enter. It doesn't make sense to consider one place and not all the rest. So we didn't, okay? But it's a good question. I mean,
Is 1 over k to the third the exact threshold, and if there's anything more than that, then it's bad?
I repeated that if it is the log correction, okay. It's difficult to see. I don't know the answer, okay?
Okay, so you don't know. Okay, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, anyway, so here, so if you do the same calculation, why this is an effect? Because if you do the calculation in the, for some congregator scattering amplitude in the system in Minkowski, you get here log of the renormalization scale over the physical scale of the scattering process, which sometimes is S. I really like this result because it's telling you that in the sitter, the scale which replaces the scattering amplitude here, the scattering two particle parameter S, becomes Hubble, the energy scale of inflation. And this is telling you that inflation is doing scattering amplitude of energy over the Hubble, which is, I think is very nice result, is what's going on. And notice that also is making the fact that in Minkowski, since it was a derivative threshold, it would go to zero like k to the 6. So, but for much longer than the horizon, this k to the 6 becomes Hubble to the 6. This means that in the sitter space, the quantum effect, even just the log running, is much enhanced with respect to the, in the infrared, with respect to the, to the, the, to the Minkowski 1. Loop effects are much larger. So now let's move to more usual, so this, this was the first IR effect I discussed. Now there are, which is depends really on the way that you regulate around Minkowski, around the sitter. Now I come to other things, which are the more usual IR effect, which is the time dependence. And I will claim that there is no time dependence for zeta after you take care of the tadpole diagrams. That is, now, when, if you study a theory of inflation, there will be clearly tadpole diagrams. Like you will have, there is a, you can, a cubic interaction that will source a tadpole diagram. Now, a tadpole for zeta is bad. A tadpole for a fluctuation means that the background is not a solution to the fluctuation. This means, mainly this means that you are not expanding around the ground. This is so because, for example, if you take some, it's clear that this loop here will change, but it seems that the property of the stress energy tensor, in fact, people here would assume it's probably, they have computed the correction for the Timon nu. And this means that, naturally speaking, you should change your background solution, because now you have a contribution to the vacuum energy or to the stress energy tensor. So, roughly speaking, or not so roughly, you should take, if you take the old Hubble and the old solution, it's not more a solution than an equation. You should include this thing, which is the contribution to the vacuum energy, if you want. And define zeta in that background. In other words, again, taking this effective theory of inflation, which is the one I use, there are here two tadpole terms in the infrared Lagrange. These tadpole terms need to be changed. That is, you have to subtract delta Hubble, which is the correction you get from this part. Now, delta Hubble here, you call this the true Hubble. The true Hubble rate, the Trusk effect, the one. And then there is this additional tadpole terms in one loop. What happens is that these tadpole terms here are really tadpole counter term, finite counter term, which cancel the tadpole contribution you get from here. So if you have to do that, this is the first thing you have to do. In other words, it's very simple. You have to do around the inflation around the true background history, taking account that there are corrections to the. So, I define A as this, which is the one loop A. So I'm just expanding. disk factor around the one loop of the ground history.
But in effect, field theory, anything that multiplies linear is an equation. Of
yeah, now in fact, notice I put a species sometimes which is linear in a fluctuation because
this is what I'm asking.
Yeah, so this will become.
It's not in the spirit of effective field theory.
I think it is, in the sense that now these terms here will be cancelled by the tadpoles of the Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian, so there is no tadpole term here. But now, before there were no tadpole terms, now there are two tadpole terms. I need those because I need to cancel the tadpole one loop diagram. So, like when you do randomization, you put them consistent at each loop point.
Okay, so you're saying if you do it consistently, it will disappear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they cancel exactly, yeah, the value of zeta is zero. Mm. Now, we thought that this was fixing the time dependence, but then it made me notice that the paper by Wooder and others, I will call it Wooder because he's the one I know, and he's American, so that
he's
the chairman. He's the chairman, so many reasons. So that claim that he found this time dependence here for the triple five, that we had this morning. And actually, in the first line of the abstract was saying that we were wrong. So of course, I'm a young guy and I'm a little concerned by this kind of, when I see this kind of paper, when they make me notice this kind of paper. So panic, right? Oh, Wooder, that's all. We did everything wrong. So, but I think it's not, actually.
So surprising.
I said that you didn't look at a certain kind of interaction because you were interested in parametric enhancement.
No, but if you carefully look out, read our paper, maybe then there is also the statement.
Or something. All the two pages of it.
Okay, that doesn't matter. So let's talk about this paper. Maybe it was not polemic, but no problem. I want to talk this thing because anyway, you claim that it's a factor. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Tell us why I'm wrong.
Yeah, if usually when you find something wrong in the paper, you send it to the authors and discuss with them. So since you didn't do, probably you don't think it was our mistake. So perfectly fine. So let's discuss about this. So I think what happens here is that you forgot to normalize the unperturbed history. That is, let me show that if you do not, what happens? So suppose you expand your background history around a given cosmological constant, but there is a slightly different cosmological constant. Then the true Hubble rate clearly is the old Hubble rate plus the cosmological constant, kind of obvious. But this means that the true Hubble, the right scale factor, which is if the rho true, is in general is the trilevel A plus the zeta contribution, because the long wavelength zeta is just the rescaling of A. This means that the true Hubble is just the trilevel Hubble plus zeta dot. And this means that from this equation, then you get, if you expand around the wrong background, zeta dot gets a tadpole over the delta lambda over m plus square h.
Zeta dot is verb of zeta, is that?
Yeah, now this was supposed to be a fluctuation, but now there is a tadpole, so it gets a verb. Now.
And how does that kind of affect the zeta zeta correlation?
Yeah. So I think you read it. Effects on correlation function, right? So now we look at the correlation function. So, of course, that was a tadpole, but let's see the effect of the correlation function. In this effect, now you begin to expand the actual quadratic level, and you find that if you're wrong around the wrong background, you get a mass square, which is delta lambda over m plus square. The mass square means that equation of motion gets sourced. That is, there is an equation of motion like this for zeta. This is the standard for our parameter, and now it doesn't equal to zero, but it equal to the mass term. The mass term forces an evolution for zeta outside the horizon. This mass term you can solve because zeta equals delta lambda plus h t perturbed by zeta t, and then you can send this initial zeta with another one to get the two-point function. Now we got the two-point function which is time dependent with this factor here, h squared over m plus square. So you see that if you don't expand the right background, you have to take care of the tadpole diagrams because otherwise you get an evolution for zeta outside the horizon.
Which contribution are you considering?
This is a toy example for the cosmological constant, but it's a UV effect. This is not the log KL effects of which you discussed yet. This is the time of this morning. It's a time, so the time dependence effect are a mix, I would say. We call it the IR effect, but I would say it's a mixed UV IR effect because it's the UV modes that you didn't correctly take care of that are back reacting on the on the AR effect. So it's in cut space time this happens, and I think it's this kind of thing. Now, this is a square, therefore we got this time dependence, but the prefactor is not the one on the paper. Why? Well, that was a big chair, but in fact there was another thing that was not correct. That is, in the way this result was derived, it was the fact that it was saying, oh, we're just interested in the long scale fluctuation, so let's not neglect the derivative on the long fluctuations. Yes, you did in the coupling constant, yes. We can check it. We can explicit. Okay, as you wish. I mean, look, this result, I think it's...
That's just false. Every single interaction in gravity has two derivatives on it.
Two derivatives you put. Derivative on the longer mode.
On the what?
On the longer mode. On the longer mode. On the mode you are reacting on.
I don't know what you're even saying, but I guarantee you every single diagram I looked at had two derivatives.
No, I mean, you're not writing the quality action in your paper. Maybe you did it secretly, but in your paper you just say, you say the words, let me minimally generalize the Lagrange for the Schell mode adding this coupling constant. A goes into A to the zeta. A goes into A times if the zeta.
That's absolutely not what I
did. Maybe the other people did.
I wouldn't say this if it's not.
Maybe
you please go ahead.
Maybe you did a lot of calculation, then in the paper it's written differently. Fine. But what happens?
Are you sure you both have the same definition of zeta?
So it's very simple what was going on here. Is that I think so, but that if you forget the time derivatives, here you have a coupling to delta lambda. Then the coupling to delta lambda, there is also the scale factor, but there is also delta n. The delta n is equal to zeta dot over h. So if you, this actually happens to be just the derivative, the total derivative cube zeta times 1 over h. So if you integrate this coupling by part, you get this role of suppression in the coupling. Instead, actually, you have only this one, and that's why you get 1 over epsilon dot star additionally. That's I think, a mistake. This is the coupling to the quantum is role of suppressed, and it needs to be so because the action for zeta starts role of suppressed. And so you get the spurious otherwise role of suppression. So this, I think, really solves the issue of the fact that this is reproduced parametrically the result, and I think even exactly, but you have to take so the point is that you have to take into account if you really want the equation of motion for the long mode time derivatives, because you can integrate by parts, and they act on A. That's the problem. A is not suppression. And then you need to take into account the tadpoles, and after you do that, there is no time dependence. Look, I mean, I just read it before coming to the talk, to be sure again, and this with we minimally generalize the.
I have it right here. No, that's fine.
Anyway, yeah. So we can continue to discuss if one. I have logs. So anyway, it wasn't a criticism to us. So let me just talk about the other AR effects. Now we found that there is no time effect, I think. So now we talk about other effects, and I think they are all projection effects. So the idea is that their effect is all encoded in the projection effects. So and let's start with the log KL, which are IR logs, and I think they have zero physical effect. So let's see what happens. So let me, for the moment, assume that when we compute inflation, what we really care is the amplitude of a mode when it crosses the horizon. This is an assumption that we did, Kiddies did, everybody did, and I think it's true. So we can even prove it. So what happens is that when you ask what is the amplitude equivalent to perturbation, in the absence of time dependence, you just say, oh, give me the amplitude of h4 to the 4 for the phi square at the time when the mode crosses the horizon. Which namely you do k over a t horizon proxy equal over the h t horizon proxy. So why there is a possible infrared effect? The infrared effect comes because coincidentally, the scalar field goes like h cubed t, if you do the calculation for moving coordinates, and which means that it goes like n from the beginning of inflation. Now, let's take again our diagram of inflation, and what is happening is that there is the isotope is coming down the potential, but there are moles coming out. And this fluctuation here can push the isotope much back in its trajectory, or forward in its trajectory, can change the position on its trajectory. And clearly, and therefore, the commoving scale at which at the end of inflation you see a mode can be very different. This kinematical effect, this projection effect, which enhances the scale at which the commoving mode is when it crosses the horizon, is all what the mode can do. You were asking this morning to Martin, but it's kind of obvious that it's GR which is telling us this. That is that if you have a long metric fluctuation, much longer than U, you don't observe it. Only the gradients of the terms are important. Only gradients, actually, even second derivatives of the modes are the only thing with matters. So it better be that it does nothing longer than the horizon. In fact, it does so nothing that even Giddings and the others, there are in this relation, I say, oh, this background mode is nothing, so the more function of the background mode is really the same without the background mode, just with the scale coordinates. And by going on, they try to respond and they find this result here, which goes like 10 to the minus 10 times the number of the beginning of inflation. To me, this is extremely worrisome. This is a big infrared effect. And we'll discuss about it. Now, there was a technical problem in the calculation that I would like to underline because it's useful for later. That is, in reality, when you try to check it diagrammatically, because I would like to say that this thing that they did is true, even in a full quantum mechanical calculation. And actually, I think if they don't agree with the quantum mechanical calculation, it's because the quantum mechanical calculation is wrong. So this is really super true, I really think. But in fact, they wasn't agreeing in the first version. The reason is because they forgot one diagram. That is, you can compute the two-point function of zeta, taking each zeta second order, which second order means applying the Gauss function on two quadratic first order terms.
So let me be clear, you're saying that they're wrong too?
The consideration is wrong, but when you check it with the diagrams in the current dash, it doesn't work. And I expect for a physical reason, but if you put all the diagrams, they forgot the diagram. If you put all the diagrams, it works. And I want to explain this because I think it's a very physical picture and I want to explain it. That's because of that.
So I think I
don't care about the mistake because the consistency is super good, it's super true. But I think it's a nice physical point, the role of the diagrams, which helps a lot for intuition, and I'm going to explain that. Okay? So when you compute the two-point function L1 loop, you can put each of the two legs a second order, which means you can say, oh, this is the Gauss function applied to some source, quadratic source. This diagram we should represent like this, and then you square it. That is, you take two primordial modes, one short, one long, and the generator is short, and then you can square this with another and correlate the primordial modes. This is something called cut in the middle diagram, we called it in our first paper, because it is each mode interacts only once with the long mode. Each mode evolves and interacts with the long mode. And this gives you the S minus one, this is the diagram which gives you the S minus one square effect, because it's really... So you didn't read the paper. I knew it. That's the same reason why it's doing it. No, this is a correlation function. I mean, it's a well-defined perturbation theory.
I'm sure it is, and I'm asking you now for the second time to define it, because you said it was...
So this is correlation function, primordial modes, and then this is a Gauss function, inserted here, and of course I suppressed the three modes, everything. And you correlate these two, so here you have a correlation function, then you get this function. Yes. But it's very physical. Okay, forget about the diagram means. It means that you have computed one loop diagram. So you can say, oh, I want to take account of the interaction. So let me, loop are nothing but solving the loops are do nothing but solving the perturbed equation of motion. So you take a mode, you let it evolve, and then you let it interact with a mode, and then you keep going. This, you can square it, and you get a diagram. Another physical effect is taking a primordial mode. You can take, the second physical effect is taking the first of the two legs, a qubit level. No, come on. You have been so... I'm using the time dependence of the correlation function to push the little forward in time. So, no, okay. I think it's not long. I'm almost done. So, there is the cube. You can take another diagram, which you take the cubic, a guy, a cubic order, and one linear. This physically what represents? Vedete, from other mode, you don't interact with the long mode, and this was the short mode again. This long mode interacts again with another long mode, and changes exactly to again, and then you get the short mode. So this is, and then this you correct with the short mode. So this is really a mode interacting twice with a mode. So it's clearly it's running. It's taking the second derivative, changing also the field. So anyway, this gives the running. That's why. So the formula uses only this, and that's why the running wasn't there. But it's a very physical intuition, because with this kind of intuition, you can understand the dynamical effects in the zero. That is, the mode longer and shorter than the mode you are considering decouple from the evolution of the modes and give no effect. So, coming back, so even after this second mistake, you can find really that, and the constitution was derived directly in this way, that it is true that this is true, this is absolutely true. The thing that they found is absolutely true. However, I think this is not absolutely zero physical effect, because now what happens is that, let's say that this is inflation, and then at a certain point, these things are already...
Whoa, didn't they find some term dependence?
This is about the log KL. Sorry, what did... No, we look,
or did they
we change
the log K independence that you don't like? I'm getting lost in all the claims, but I thought that's what, exactly what you said you didn't want to have happen, right?
Yeah, if I can say that, it has no effect, okay? I'm saying it is zero. It is zero. What do you want with the zero?
Your same calculation is true, but it's not easy.
Yeah, and now if I am allowed to talk, I'll do it. Zero is physical, but K is not. Okay, K is not physical.
But if zero depends on K,
K equals 2 pi over lambda, that's right.
Okay, now if you, okay, I agree that you might have complaints, but I'm going to explain that to the point now. Okay. You have 2 minutes left. So, now, what is this point? What is this one? So, now, let's say that there is our mode crossing the horizon at this point. But there was a mode before, and we are trying to understand the effect of this mode before. However, when this, you see, when this mode crosses, this mode is constant up to the time of reheating. So we're asking, what is now we are an observer reheating, and we're looking at a certain length on this reheating surface. And we are asking, since the dynamics of the mode is just concerning when what was Hubble over phi dot at the time horizon crossing, can you please tell me if I have a distance when this crosses the horizon? This is the question I want to know. So I take a distance, and how do I measure the distance? I measure like Einstein told us. Shoot the photo, let it come back, divide by 2 and the speed of light. This is the distance. Now you say, I have this distance, and since there was absolutely no dynamic from the long mode, I just risked, there is no dynamic from the long mode, therefore I have just basically another FRW with a different scale factor. The scale factor is A of t times e to the z of the ground. What is z of the ground is a malocation. And therefore, I just apply the rule of FRW. This I divide, to ask how, what was the distance, physical distance at a different time, I just divide by the ratio of the scale factor, which now includes the zetas. So, by the property of the exponential, the zeta becomes the difference of the two. And if you think of zeta as, your physical mode, you're asking, what is physical mode? Which is scaled in this way from the physical mode at time reheating. You're asking when this was Hubble. When this is Hubble, I tell you that the amplitude is this at Hubble cross. Now, notice that from this expression, if you take zeta as the integral in d3k, since this is a subtraction, the modes longer than your mode cancel exactly. So they're completely irrelevant, completely zero for the physical effect for the dynamics for the physical associated to your mode. There is, and in fact, it's not even true on average. It's true realization by realization. Given a universe, the zeta mode, whatever, how much unlikely it is with 10 sigma, 1 sigma, unlikely, it cancels. It doesn't enter. Because you can do the physics, local physics, without knowing about the background, and you can do all the prediction you want. So, in fact, I think this is a Uru, but many people, and I think the people who invented inflation know this from the beginning.
But this is just true in the small box?
Yeah, this is true. If I observe a mode, so I want to, I am a very simple-minded guy, but I say, let me say what is observable, right? This is an IR issue, so let's be careful with what I said. If I observe a mode, then it cancels. So for everything observed, so I think now the challenge is up to you. If you tell me what a big box means, because in the moment I observe it, there is no effect. So yeah, I agree that you want to talk about the global space-time. I see your point of view. I'm not fully critical. But since you are talking about IR effect, and you are talking about something that you accept is not related to something visible one observer. Then
well, in the small box, and we.
In any, well, I don't know.
At least in this case.
I don't understand the small box and big box because I don't need to do any average on long modes. This cancels always. There's no need for me to have any big box.
That's not true. If you take a large box, a large aggregate, and you average your correlation function over this whole region in the coordinates that are given globally, like for example the angle of the sky. If you just take the angle of the sky as a coordinate and you measure the correlation function, then you will get a log enhancement, the logarithm of the size of that.
So yeah, here you see the cancellation is true realization by realization.
I mentioned to you that if you define your correlator properly using either invariant distances or always taking a small patch.
Yeah, but I think the way you say fix is extremely confusing because it's not that I define fix properly. I sent all that. The coordinates are delicate. Be sure you're doing the right thing. There's only one thing to define a distance. There's only one way to
no, there's various ways to define the distance, and you can't say that people are just wrong who take coordinate distance on a well-defined gauge. You take a surface, you choose a gauge, then the coordinates are not physical distances, but it's physical.
No, okay, yes, but I mean, so if you send a photon there and wait to come back, it travels on the background. So it's time. Yeah, but come on then. I mean, this is ridiculous, right? No, I don't agree. Yeah, I mean, we agree, and I don't want to move from this because, come on. You take the Wonder Book of GR, and. You can say that. But anyway, the distance you measure with this way, okay? This is the way, okay? Then the others, you have to be delicate, right? Luminosity, distance, everything. You can do whatever. But
I agree.
Richard showing you that you are approaching the end of inflation.
Yeah, so now I have. So having said that, okay, I think.
It's a catch.
So there is a physical IR effect.
Yeah, now I think that all the physical effects we discussed so far are not physical. But there is one which is physical. If you want, I can tell you. Otherwise, no.
Let's call it to an end, because I think some people, although I find this fascinating, some people may not find it quite so interesting. We should give them a chance to meet gracefully.
That's fun to watch.
So I apologize I went over time even because of the question of the chairman, but please feel free to leave if you want to leave. I think this is, we talked this conference, this is one which is the one which is measured. True, regularly in principle. But please feel free to leave. I don't mind. Please, so who wants to leave? Please. No problem.
No one, then please.
Okay, I'll talk 5 minutes. 5 minutes. So, we saw that the long mode longer than you don't matter at all. And we saw that what you have computed to make an experiment is the ratio of this quantity, the discrete effect. Now, the ratio of the A's is what we call the classical number of refolding from when the mode is left horizon to the end of inflation. This is the number of classical refolding. But here, hold on, there was another term, which is the difference of the background mode. What is that doing? If I take the expectation value, I will get a variance, an expectation value for the square. And the square, you can compute it, and goes like zeta tilde square, which is what I call the power spectrum, 10 to the minus 10, times the classical number of refolding. To the end, from when you're more classical across the horizon to the end of inflation. This number is 60, it's not huge, it's not MBD. So it's telling you that the actual number of refoldings, if you're outside the physical mode and you're asking when it came out of the horizon, it didn't come out of the horizon when you think classically it came. It came a bit later because this expansion is more than exponential. Expansion rate is faster than exponential. There is more, it's not the rate, sorry, it's the overall expansion, which I spent in a second, is enhanced, is quantum enhanced by this amount, which is like a number of classical refolding times zeta square. This has a physical effect because it means that, again, you go here and says, okay, when I'm more across the horizon, I didn't cross at the point classical, but cross at the point n quantum, and probably on the potential, which I didn't draw n classical and n quantum. This is classical, this is quantum, so Hubble, Phi dot, they're different. So the two-point function of the mode is h to the 4 for phi square at the true time of horizon crossing, which is the classical time plus a correction, and this correction gives you a linear correlation the tilt, which is this, times 60 times 10 to the minus 6. So this is a true physical effect. The amplitude of the mode, which came out from that model, is not that one, but it's slightly different. The model, given a model with m squared phi squared inflation, you have a different amplitude. So if you want to match with observation, you have to define Yeah, the mode of association, there is a difference here. Not that this is feasible because indeed it's a different amplitude for the modes. I mean, it's really a different amplitude for the modes for a given scale. It says that the mode comes out from here instead of from here, so it's a different amplitude.
So this does have some k dependency?
And again, all this is more suppressed, so I have no idea about the k. Yeah, it has some k dependence, yes. It has a k dependence because it's quantum.
You were worried terribly about.
Yeah, but I already told you.
But you'd accept an extra suppression factor of 1 to 100. That makes it all okay?
May I say my finger? So,
please.
First, you're asking all the question about the thing that you didn't care, the part of the paper which you didn't care, which is determining inflation. But now, I told you before that these raw parameters.
I wouldn't have asked about it.
No, these raw parameters here. This is a raw parameter effect, suppressed. I'm not able to make the jump to the conclusion from this correlation function to the consequence for Euler inflation for the fact that we didn't do the calculation reading all these raw parameters. There are many other terms in this raw parameter. I don't know what they do. So any k-dependence which is suppressed as a raw parameter, you have to think about that.
So if all of those guys don't add up to zero, then you'd be upset.
No, I told you I don't know. No, because there are other corrections. So, I mean... So I'm upset if after you do this and you correct from zero, so if you do a consistent calculation, then the time inflation goes away or it's always the time inflation. So this is a question which you want to answer, but this is only part. There are other zero corrections. You have to keep them all into account. It's not that you can keep one term and not the other. As you know, you cannot do one loop and not the other diagram, right?
This is also something that grows linearly in the number of e-folds, which
yes.
Even, you know, 60, who cares, but if you have a very long period of inflation, that
I like it, because this allows me to say the next slides.
Oh.
Okay, thanks. Yes, so before the slide, there was another small question. That is, here, I took, this was a quantum number of e-folding in answer, so I took the expectation value. But this is quantum. Why I take the expectation value? And it turns out that the expectation value goes like a number classical e-folding, but the variance goes like just like 10 to the minus 5 or 10 to the minus 10. That is, it's not enhanced by the number of e-folding. But what is the effect is coming from? This effect is coming from the model shorter than your mode. That is, take your mode comes out of the horizon here and then it keeps expanding until the end of inflation. After your mode has come out of the horizon, many modes keep coming out of the horizon, the one shorter than you. And then at both time they have a fluctuation, they will jump here and there. This affects the overall expansion of this region of space because if you jump forward, you expand less. If you jump backward, you expand forward, you expand more. And since expanding more, you create more bubbles, then perturbative you are enhancing the overall expansion respect to classical one. But on average, since there are many, many bubbles, the variance is very, very small. It's not enhanced by the number of classical e-folding because the contribution from when you have 60 folded, there are usually 60 small bubbles, more small region of bubble space. They have zero variance. But the one just after you, and just an order one e-folding, the most which come out, one order e-folding after you, don't have a big variance. They don't average out. So you get the variance only from the effect from the first mode, which is zeta squared. This is good because that was risky in the predictive inflation. If this quantum effective quantum number of the foldings from when the molecule rises to when it reaches you was very stochastic, then it was all different business. But it's not. It's the incredibly good approximation always there, up to 160.
It already was truly good approximation, and I don't understand. I could not summarize what you just said in the last hour worth of talk.
So,
one way, the other way, I hope other people got more out of
it. Yeah, it's recorded, so, okay. Sorry. So, going to Steve's question, he was asking, what happens when the classical number of fold is very large, or when zeta squared is more than 1, when it is the standard parameter? And this, through the slide I showed at the beginning, in the second paper, not the first one, we were able actually to solve this question. Is given a box, the box of the size of your mode, how much volume you produce. And this becomes a very non-perturbative problem when this factor is of order 1. And then we were able to compute with some strange technique that I don't describe, in all the regime, and the expectation value follows this distribution. So this distribution is like this. It's picked, it's beautiful, I find it nice, because it's picked still on a value. This is always an average value, but the average value can be very different from the standard one. It can be the square of the other one. But the variance is always smaller.
Look, the conference organizer is giving me dirty looks.
I'm hassling Richard. Just because we have the banquet tonight, so I think it would be nice to be able to quit now and take a little breather before that.
Okay. So, summarize, I think there are no IR effects, and there's one, which is this one. Which is,
Richard, don't panic. Let him finish, and then we'll move on from here.
Yes, I got that. We're all wrong. He's right. Yes.
Don't panic.
No. For example, Giddings, his calculation is perfect. But that's a tiny effect, but I explained
it. Yes, I know.
I didn't have time to explain this.
But not him, but we're both wrong.
Let's just summarize it. We can take the fight outside.
No, that's what you do in a bar,
you take it outside.
Sorry, if you're interested in progress, that's one thing. If you're interested in polemic, it's a bit.
Okay.
My suggestion is that whoever wants to fight till banquet stays here. Whoever wants to survive, go outside.